They had arrived at it. The second strangest thing about the ship was watching the somebody else's problem field at work. They could now clearly see the ship for what it was, simply because they knew it was there. It was quite apparent, however, that nobody else could. This wasn't because it was actually invisible or anything hyper-impossible like that. The technology involved in making anything invisible is so infinitely complex that 999,999,999,999 times out of a billion, it is much simpler and more effective just to take the thing away and do without it. The ultra-famous Scientomagician Ephrafax of Wug once bet his life that, given a year, he could render the great mega-mountain Magramel entirely invisible. Having spent most of the year jiggling around with immense luxo-valves and refracto-nullifiers and spectra and bypass-o-matics, he realised, with 9 hours to go, that he wasn't going to make it. So, he and his friends, and his friends' friends, and his friends' friends' friends, and his friends' 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 friends, and some rather less good friends of theirs who happen to own a major stellar trucking company, put in what is now widely recognised as being the hardest night's work in history. And, sure enough, on the following day, Magramel was no longer visible. Ephrafax lost his bet, and therefore his life, simply because some pedantic adjudicating official noticed A, that when walking around the area that Magramel ought to be in, he didn't trip over or break his nose on anything, and B, a suspicious-looking extra moon. The somebody else's problem field is much simpler and more effective, and what is more, can be run for over 100 years on a single torch battery. This is because it relies on people's natural predisposition not to see anything they don't want to, weren't expecting, or can't explain. If Ephrafax had painted the mountain pink and erected a cheap and simple somebody else's problem field on it, then people would have walked past the mountain, round it, even over it, and simply never have noticed that the thing was there. And this is precisely what was happening with Slarty Bartfast's ship. It wasn't pink, but if it had been, that would have been the least of its visual problems, and people were simply ignoring it like anything. The most extraordinary thing about it was that it looked only partly like a spaceship, with guidance fins, rocket engines and escape hatches and so on, and a great deal like a small, upended Italian bistro. Ford and Arthur gazed up at it with wonderment and deeply offended sensibilities. "Yes, I know," said Slarty Bartfast, hurrying up to them at that point, breathless and agitated. But there is a reason. Come, we must go. The ancient nightmare has come again. Doom confronts us all. We must leave at once." "I fancy somewhere sunny," said Ford. Ford and Arthur followed Slarty Bartfast into the ship and were so perplexed by what they saw inside it that they were totally unaware of what happened next outside. A spaceship, yet another one, but this one sleek and silver, descended from the sky onto the pitch without fuss, its long legs unlocking in a smooth ballet of technology. It landed gently. It extended a short ramp. A tall, grey-green figure marched briskly out and approached the small knot of people who were gathered in the centre of the pitch, tending to the casualties of the recent bizarre massacre. It moved people aside with quiet, understated authority and came at last to a man lying in a desperate pool of blood, clearly now beyond the reach of any earthly medicine, breathing, coughing his last. The figure knelt down quietly beside him.
"Arthur Philip Diodat?" asked the figure.
The man, with horrified confusion in his eyes, nodded feebly.
"You're a no-good Dumbo nothing," whispered the creature. "I thought you should know that before you went."